The following is a question and answer period at a college preaching program on June 25th, 1992 at Kutztown University.
That's how we feel about it. It's just a fact of life. These two things are there. There's sense gratification and there's self-realization. And they really don't go together. If your self-realization is going to increase, your sense gratification is going to decrease and vice versa. A lot of people would like to have both. And there's a lot of people marketing all kinds of spiritual ways of life, which don't, no austerities, no this, no that. You do anything you want, and still, you know, you become God in 6 months. This is, you know, marketing for Americans. Really, it doesn't work like that. So those of us in the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we're actually trying to become serious about spiritual life. And the prospect of liberation or being a transcendentalist is actually the prospect of becoming free from material desires. And in Krishna consciousness, we feel that it is possible to do so because of the positive engagements in devotional service. If you just try to take your senses and just try to negate them by sheer withdrawal, you'll never be able to maintain any control. But if you engage your senses in Krishna service and experience a higher taste of positive spiritual activities, then by experiencing that a higher taste or a better taste, by getting a taste of spiritual life, then you will gradually lose your taste for material things. And this has certainly been my experience. Actually, the first time I got involved in the Krishna consciousness, when I was in my third year of graduate school in religion, and I was, one of the personal reasons I was studying religion was I was looking for transcendence in my own life, like a lot of people were in that time. And I had decided from looking at all the different religious traditions I had studied that Lord Buddha was right when he said that first proposal Buddha put forward was that life is suffering, material life is suffering. I agreed with that. Some people never see it, but to other people it's really, really obvious. Suffering because of some very basic things, birth, death, old age, and disease. That's enough to guarantee that it's going to be suffering, birth, death, old age, and disease. So I could see that. That material life, whatever you get attached to, it's all going to be over. And there's going to be suffering. And the more you're attached, the worse your suffering is going to be. You want to withdraw and have no relationships? That's also miserable. What are you going to do? So I could see that was the nature of material existence. The Buddha says the cause of our suffering is our attachments, our cravings, our desiring, our clinging, our hanging on to things when everything is transient, moving. Says, so therefore, Buddha said, you have to become free from desires. So I agreed with that, and I saw that that teaching was there, at least on the higher level of every religious tradition. So I was kind of trying on my very own to become free from material desires, and not meeting with very much success at all. So it was at that particular point that I just happened to run into Hare Krishna devotees in 1969. They were chanting on the campus of the Hare of the Temple University campus, and I was kind of interested because, wow, you know, here's the missionary effort is coming this way, and I thought that was a big global change. And but the other thing I thought was, you'll never find me doing something like that. And but then a friend of mine said, hey, wow, this far-out thing is going. You got to come. This Sunday love feast. So I went to the temple, which was that, and it was this little row house in West Philadelphia. Those days, the devotees were very heavy. And the devotee in the temple... to an audience of all counterculture people, I mean, long hair and reeking of patchouli and marijuana, gives this real heavy lecture against sex and drugs and rock and roll, you know, what everybody was into, and sense gratification. Really, I mean, negative. And the people all around me were getting turned off, but I thought, wow, somebody's telling the truth. I was amazed to hear this devotee talking like this. And that's what really sparked my interest, because of the standard of no illicit sex, no intoxication. And then the devotee also explained that just by withdrawing from these things, it would not be possible to control your senses, but you have to experience a higher taste by engaging your senses in Krishna's service, and he recommended the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So that's what I did. I got some beads, and I went home and started chanting, just to see what would happen. I sat down for maybe a half an hour a day with the beads and just chanted Hare Krishna pretty intensely, and that's what I did. And my material desires began to go away. You know, I didn't see fireworks or ecstasy or anything like that. But what happened is that lust and greed and anger began to decrease. And in fact, after a short time, they began to decrease so much I didn't know what to do with myself. And I realized that I was dealing with something that seemed very powerful. And I really wasn't sure what it was. I mean, all these movies with these weird guys going around like this, and I didn't know where they were coming from or what they were doing. And so I stopped chanting, just because I was found it a little heavier than I was wanted to deal with. And I stopped chanting for a while, and then really felt miserable. I was like this big greasy cloud rolled back over on me, and after a while I realized I really needed the chanting. So then very cautiously, I began to... At that time, the devotees didn't have very many books. This was 1969. But I managed to get a book, Isha Upanishad, Prabhupada's translation of Isha Upanishad. And I had studied this Isha Upanishad in a couple of courses, actually. So I was interested to see what he had to say. And I was amazed at the quality of the theology of the Krishna conscious movement. I wouldn't have expected, you know, you don't expect people who, you know, stand in street corners and bang tambourines to have sophisticated theologies. These people did. And I was really amazed. And that's when I began to realize that there was something quite extraordinary behind the Hare Krishna movement. And I mean, by this point I was fairly well trained, and my field was philosophy of religion. I was pretty much of a critical thinker. Most of the devotees I met weren't. Right away, sometimes I could see that in some ways I could understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness better than they could. But they were practicing better than I was, so that kept me real humble, because I could see that they could do things I couldn't do. But I began to really get involved with Prabhupada's books and became convinced that he was right, that everything he said was true, that this was actually the truth about the absolute truth. And I became a full-time devotee. So it wasn't just the chanting or the experience, but it was also that I became intellectually convinced at the same time. That's what happened to me. Anything else? Yeah?
Maybe you're the woman you brought along.
Yeah,
what
Jamuna.
What is the status of, I don't know your name, what is the status of women in the tradition? Are they equal participants or a lower service class, kind of like the Catholic, the power of...
Well, there's many services that can be done in Krishna consciousness, and men or women can take them up. For myself, I work in a department, the altar, which traditionally, a lot of times, there's men. It's called a pujari or a priest, which is men priests, but there's many women who are also sharing those responsibilities of priests. We all can get the same initiation. We learn to live together. Generally, the women and men live separately, but in terms of opportunities for becoming self-realized, it's all the same. Because we're really not these bodies. We're not men. We're not women. We're spirit souls, and we all have a relationship with the Lord, so there's equal opportunity.
Yeah?
I have a question. When you were looking at the experience,
slowly. We're still married. She also became a devotee when I did. It took her a little longer, actually, and when I first became involved, she was then pregnant with our second child, and she didn't really feel like going through any metaphysical changes until all that was over with. And she would go to the temple, and the incense would make her sick, and the food would be too spicy. I was kind of mean about it, I thought. Boy, if it makes you sick, maybe you're a demon or something. I didn't know, but actually what happened was we were married in college. It was really quaint for those days. I was like, in college, I was disguised to myself as a kind of hotshot atheist, philosophy major, had all the arguments against God. And I met my wife, and she was this like real naive practicing Roman Catholic girl. I was amazed to see something like this. So naturally, I went to work on her. And destroyed her faith, but did the right thing and married her in the process. So then when we became devotees, she got really mad at me. She said, "See, I was right all along." She said, "Why'd you put me through all that?" So in some ways, she was. To her, it was like going back to what she was originally brought up in, much more than when I had. So she got into Krishna consciousness too, became a devotee also.
Are your kids in like public school?
Yeah, well, they're all grown up and things like that. Most, two of them are anyway. And my two oldest kids actually went through a Hare Krishna school. We had our own school system, which probably guaranteed they're going to rebel against it. Anyway, they're both in college. My oldest child's daughter is 22 or 23, something like that, and she's at Temple University. She's studying. I don't know, business management and marketing and stuff like that. What can you do? And then my next kid, here's the real revenge. He's starting his senior year at Penn. He's a Navy ROTC. So here's where the colonel and his lady, my parents, they get their own back again. What we discover is both of them, to some extent, they're not as strict devotees as I am, for sure. And they have a kind of attitude, yes, someday. But right now I want to try out some other things. But what you discover, of course, is we raised our children in the Krishna consciousness movement. And then when they get to be about 16 or 17, they decide whether they want to be devotees or not, or how much they want to be devotees. Interesting parallel we discovered with the Amish, actually. Their kids come into a lot of contact with non-Amish kids. It's getting more and more crowded in Lancaster County. Packed in together, so the Amish kids have a lot of contact. And what they do is, when they're 14 years old, the kids can, they wear blue jeans, drive cars. We have a farm in Juniata County. A lot of Amish live around there, and the women there get babies delivered by an Amish midwife, and they shear our sheep and stuff like that. We get along fine with them, and. But the word goes out, hey, a bunch of Amish kids are having a party, and everybody goes. And it's just like, seems to me what happened is something that everybody just had to realize, that this is what's going to happen when the kid gets to be about 14 years old. He's going to check it out and see what it is. And then, at the age of 18 or 19, they're supposed to decide whether they want to be strict old lot or Amish, and some do. And a bunch become Mennonites, and so I guess some disappear into suburbia, I suppose. I don't know. Well, there's a similar sort of experience like that. We've also seen with our first generation that's grown up in the movement. I think those kids had kind of a rough time. I mean, they really got we didn't know what we were doing. We were trying to, you know, set up this whole new civilization in place and experimented with our kids. Of course, now I hear about it all the time, but now they're old enough to talk back, you know. Tell me what it was like, just what happened, you know, when we sent them off to boarding school at the age of 6 and so on. Anyway, what can you do? Anything else you want to know?
No.
I guess our time's up, huh?
Yeah.
We have some books here. You can, if you like, to take some literature home and look at it, and just for some donation or something. And
there's a book or two up there that you've written.
Yeah. I've got a collection of little essays that I published in Back to Godhead a magazine that I've written. A lot of it's just about being a devotee in Krishna consciousness. And those are invitations to our Sunday feast. You're welcome to come. And also the address of our vegetarian restaurant on South Street there. If you'd like to stop by, it's a pretty popular restaurant. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.